I'm sure you've heard my cats in the background, or I've talked about my fur babies on this podcast. I love them, but I don't love the smell of the cat litter. And no matter what I would do, it would still smell. But now I found Live Odor Free. They have a three-step kit that naturally eliminates odors on contact. Spray, sprinkle, deodorize. It's as easy as that. They have kits for everything. They have indoor and outdoor kits, furniture kits, mattresses, wood flooring, kits for carpets, basically a kit for everyone's needs. I don't like using products with a lot of chemicals, especially not around my cats, but the Live Odor Free products don't use enzymes, fragrances, hydrogen peroxide, or detergents, making it safe for pets and kids. Their liquid odor technology is organic, natural, non-GMO, and green. Get 20% off of your purchase. Link is in the description. Ben and Olivia were two friends who lived in New Zealand. They disappeared in the early morning on New Year's Day, January 1st, 1998. Their disappearance sparked one of the most publicized and controversial investigations in New Zealand's history. In December 1997, Ben, who was 21, and Olivia was 17, they celebrated New Year's Eve at Farno Lodge, located in the Endeavour Inlet of the Marlborough Sounds in New Zealand. Farno Lodge is steeped in history, and it's set in a stunning landscape against the beautiful backdrop of Mount Farno. The lodge overlooks Endeavour Inlet. It is a tranquil setting, and it's ideal for those looking for a quiet retreat. And with its various hiking trails, also great for those hoping to explore the beauty of the area. There are waterfront suites and chalets with a bar and restaurant, ensuring that you have a good choice of dining options. There are no roads leading to the lodge, so transfers are always made by boat. But the result is a peaceful day in the beautiful corner of New Zealand. Olivia traveled to the lodge with a group on a chartered yacht, the Tamarack. Ben arrived separately. There were about 1,500 to 2,000 other people at the party. At around 4 a.m., the celebrations were winding down. Ben and Olivia returned to the Tamarack, where they intended to sleep, but they found other people had taken their booked place on the boat. Then they boarded a passing water taxi driven by Guy, who also worked as a bartender. At the time, Guy had three other passengers on board: Hayden, Sarah, and an unidentified man. Ben and Olivia mentioned what happened, and the unidentified man offered his place on his yacht for them to sleep. Guy let Olivia and Ben off at this unidentified man's yacht, and then he dropped off his two other passengers. This was the last time Ben and Olivia were seen alive. After a five-month investigation, the police arrested Scott. At trial, he was found guilty of murder and sentenced to life imprisonment with a minimum non-parole period of 17 years. The police investigation and trial generated media attention and public debate. Scott has maintained that he is innocent, and he's filed several unsuccessful appeals. In June 2020, it was announced that the case would be referred back to New Zealand's Court of Appeal. The case remains a subject of ongoing speculation in New Zealand as a possible wrongful conviction, and it's been the subject of several books and documentaries. Ben and Olivia were reported missing on January 2nd, 1998. Initially, the police treated the investigation as a missing persons case, but it soon became apparent that the disappearance was suspicious and out of character for Ben and Olivia. Detective Pope was appointed to take charge of the investigation on January 5th, and a mix of police staff across the country joined the investigation, which became a homicide case codenamed Operation Tam, short for Tamarack. The investigation featured requests for information from the public, significant numbers of interviews across the country, and months of extensive searches of the water surrounding the Endeavour Inlet. Despite this, no bodies were ever found. In his police statement on the 3rd and the 5th of January, Guy, the driver of the water taxi, described the unknown man as having 2 days' growth hair on his face, possibly having arm tattoos, a thin build, 5'9", short, dark, wavy hair. He was scruffy in appearance and wearing a Levi shirt with jeans. Guy maintained that the man in his taxi was the same man he and other staff had served in the lounge bar earlier that evening. When he was interviewed by police, Guy was shown 2 photographs of Scott mixed in with a collection of other photos, but he said he did not recognize anyone in the photographs. Police then changed the photo of Scott in the collection to a different photo of him, in which Scott had his eyes half closed. This became known as the blink photo. On January 20th, Guy was shown a new collection of photos, known as Montage B, containing this blink photo. Guy said that this could be the mystery man on the boat, but said that while the eyes were the same as the man he had seen that night, the hair was too short and his appearance was generally too tidy. After the trial, Guy was adamant that the police misled him over the photo and said he believed Scott was innocent, and that he had inadvertently contributed to the incarceration of an innocent man. He maintained his position in multiple interviews and in an affidavit until his death in March 2021. Rosalind, who went by Roz, was the bar manager at the Farno Lodge on New Year's Eve. She also identified Scott from the blank photo in Montage B. Once she saw a picture of Scott taken that night showing him to be clean-shaven, she also recanted and signed an affidavit stating that she had made a mistake identifying him. Guy said that he felt tremendous pressure from the police and the media during the investigation. He was interrogated by detectives who initially suggested he had somehow been responsible for the disappearance of Ben and Olivia. As a result of accusations against him by the police, some locals began treating him with suspicion. People he knew began to think he was guilty and shunned him. He said that in the initial stages of the investigation, the police were desperate to arrest someone, and it could have easily have been him. He said, quote, "I know in my heart of hearts, if he, Scott, wasn't there, I'd be doing time. It's just that simple." Gee told police and the media that he had dropped Ben and Olivia off at a wooden sailboat, a boat with two masts. That's the long pole that supports the sails. On January 3rd, 1998, Gee drew a sailboat for the police of what he thought the boat looked like. He drew a yacht with two masts. He wrote 38 to 40 foot sailboat. And then he underlined the word sailboat twice. He described the sailboat as well maintained, built of timber with a thick blue stripe and several round portholes with brass surrounds. He also said that it was rafted in a group between three and five other vessels. Police seized Scott's boat, the Blade, on January 12th. Compared to the descriptions of the mystery sailboats, the Blade was too small. It had steel and not timber, no portholes, no blue strip, and had only one mast. Police analyzed thousands of photos taken on New Year's Eve and interviewed all of the boat's skippers, but were unable to corroborate Gee's reports of a sailboat in the Endeavour Inlet that night, or to find any of the three to five vessels who was rafted to it. In the following weeks, there were a number of sightings of two-masted sailboats in the Marlborough Sands area that were reported to police, including one account from a former police officer with 40 years experience. A number of witnesses who came forward with sightings of the sailboat were either told their information was not wanted or their statements were not followed up on. A former detective who worked on the case later claimed officers were told not to follow up on sightings of two-masted sailboats. Later in the investigation, Detective Pope would say that Scott, quote, stood out and had the right sort of agenda and pedigree. Scott had 48 criminal convictions at the time, mainly from when he was a teenager. Burglary, theft, cannabis offenses, two counts of possessing an offensive weapon, and one for assault when he was 16. Scott had been imprisoned for two short periods in 1989 and 1990, but had cleaned up his act in his 20s, having just one conviction in 8 years. Scott was being interviewed by Detective Fitzgerald on January 12th, when police seized the Blade and executed search warrants on the homes of his parents and his sister. During the interview, 1 week into the investigation, the detective made it clear that police considered Scott their main suspect. Rumors of Scott's family began to swirl in the small town of Picton, as well as in the media. Later, Scott would accuse police of Scott would accuse police of influencing media coverage of the case, suggesting they had leaked rumors to reporters. Scott also alleged that the police followed and intimidated family members. Police obtained warrants to tap phone lines of Scott and his family from February until his arrest in June. Police recorded 70 plus hours of conversation, and during that time, They regularly gave Scott's former girlfriend questions to ask, hoping that Scott would incriminate himself. Scott was described as smug by the police representative during these conversations, but Scott never said anything to indicate he was involved. Prior to his arrest, the media was free to report police comments and actions which demonstrated that Scott was the prime suspect without fear of jeopardizing a fair trial. They arrested him on June the 5th, 1998, 6 months after his yacht was pulled from the water in full view of bystanders and media. During this six-month period, police allowed unsubstantiated gossip about Scott's family to circulate, including rumors that Scott was sleeping with his sister. Police denied starting these rumors, but Olivia's father says the police constantly told him and his family how bad Scott's family was. Scott was advised by his lawyers not to speak publicly, so the media relied entirely on one-sided comments from the police and the victims' families. The trial lasted 11 weeks and attracted a lot of media attention. The prosecution called approximately 488 witnesses, and the defense called 26. The verdicts were delivered on September 11th, 1999. The prosecution's case was that Scott invited Ben and Olivia to sleep on his yacht in the early hours of January 1st, 1998, and this was the last time they were seen. Another water taxi driver, Don, testified that he dropped Scott at the Blade sometime between 2 and 4 a.m., Some of the occupants of the neighboring boats, Mina and Bianco, testified that they were woken up by Scott in the early morning hours as he wanted to continue partying. The prosecution argued late in the trial that Scott returned to shore after Dawn dropped him off at the Blade, but could not say how. This became known as the two-trip theory. The prosecution argued it did not matter that they could not prove how Scott got back to shore, but said that he must have, because witnesses said he was involved in an altercation on shore between 3 and 3:30 a.m. The prosecution claimed the Blade left Endeavor Inlet probably before 6 a.m. on New Year's Day with Ben and Olivia's bodies, that Scott dumped them into Cook Strait, returned, and then lied about the time he had arrived. A number of witnesses testified that they saw the boat leave at different times during the day. Another witness said the Blade arrived shortly after 5 p.m. and that when it arrived, Scott was the only occupant. Much of the prosecution's case was circumstantial. They relied on testimony from two prison informants, one of whom later admitted that he lied. Guy and Roz both ID'd Scott in the picture lineup, but both presented affidavits claiming police had misled them. No fingerprints of the victims were found on Scott's boat. The only physical evidence produced at the trial related to some human hair found on Scott's boat, which was sent for DNA testing. A forensic biologist testified in court that one hair was matched to Olivia through DNA testing. Scott's lawyers questioned the chain of custody regarding the hair, suggesting it may have been mixed up with hair samples on the same table Ente as the forensic biologist examines samples taken from Blade. So, they also pointed out that there was a 1 centimeter hole in the evidence bag containing Olivia's hair, which could have added to the risk of contamination. The accuracy of the hair test has been questioned by other experts during appeals in the years following Scott's trial. The most damning testimony came from 2 prison informants, described as Witness A and Witness B. A crucial aspect of the prosecution case came from 2 prisoners whose names were concealed and were referred to as Witness A and Witness B. They both claim that they met Scott in prison, and he said, and they say that he told them he was responsible for Ben and Olivia's disappearance. Despite his testimony, Witness A admitted to a number of lawyers and to a reporter that he had lied in court. At the time, he was receiving death threats from a gang member and was coming up for parole. Police visited him at least 10 times over a 12-month period leading up to the trial and pressured him into making the false accusations in his testimony. Witness A said that he chose to help police and hoped that they would be able to save him from the gang member. Witness B said he and Scott interacted on numerous occasions and became friends in prison. It was revealed that Witness B was never in the same cell as Scott and had little opportunity to develop a close relationship with him. It was later revealed that on his release from prison, this witness was granted the use of a car and a cell phone for his testimony. The evidence of Witness A and Witness B was described as a bombshell, and it had a dramatic impact on everyone in court. Again, the jurors only heard that Scott admitted to the murders. Admitted to the murders to Witness A and Witness B, and it was later revealed that they lied. So that's why it would have been really shocking. Scott was convicted of the murders in September 1999 and sentenced to life in prison with a minimum non-parole period of 17 years. Scott told the jury, "You are wrong," when the verdict was read out in court, and he has continued to insist that he is innocent. In the following years, Olivia's father, Gerald, expressed concerns over the investigation and the trial, saying that he felt very uncomfortable about the way the prosecution handled the case. It was pure drama, and the whole thing must have had a huge emotional effect on the jurors. Olivia's sister, Amelia, was called to testify at the trial about friendship rings she and Olivia had exchanged. The prosecutor continued questioning her until she broke down in tears. In December 2016, 2 meetings were facilitated between Scott and Gerald in Rolleston Prison. The meetings were opposed by the corrections departments and only took place after Scott requested a judicial review of the corrections refusal. Each meeting lasted approximately 3 hours. During the interview, the pair discussed concerns they had over the investigation and the trial, with Gerald saying, "We haven't gotten the truth about the case yet." Gerald said when he confronted Scott over the questions, about his circumstances on January 1st, he said Scott went silent, or his answers were unconvincing. The facilitator who was present during the interview said that Scott evaded or didn't want to answer some questions, but was otherwise very open. Scott appealed his conviction in April and May of 2000. Three appeal court judges heard submissions from both the defense and the prosecution, but decided that there was no new evidence to recommend a second trial. In 2009, Scott applied to the Governor General for a royal prerogative of mercy, which is like requesting a pardon. He sent a 22-page letter with an enclosed copy of the book titled Trial by Trickery and documentary Murder on the Blade. The Ministry of Justice appointed Christie to provide advice on the application. She produced two reports on the case in 2011 and 2013. Christie said nearly all of the threads of the prosecution's circumstantial case have been undetermined post-trial, and therefore there is no reasonable prospect that the court appeal would uphold an appeal. In November 2017, a second application for a pardon was filed on Scott's behalf by an Auckland man and an ex-convent who had taken interest in Scott's case. The application concerned the reliability of evidence relating to two blonde hairs found on a blanket on Scott's boat. It included a report by a forensic scientist which questioned whether the hairs were really Olivia's and criticized the way that the hair samples were handled at the time of the original trial. That application was denied. In June 2020, it was reported that Scott's case would be referred back to the Court of Appeal because of continuing concern about the reliability of the forensic testing used on the two hairs found on the blanket that belonged to Olivia. On May 2022, the court agreed that when the hearing goes ahead, Scott would be allowed to challenge whether the controversial eyewitness evidence related to the blink photo was properly obtained, and if it should have been heard by the jury at the trial. The week-long hearing would take place in June 2024. The board will not release Scott until he has psychological treatment to address his risk of reoffending, which based on his murder conviction has been assessed as high. In 2016, the board noted he still denies committing the murders. He's refused to engage with corrections department psychologists, and so his risk of reoffending could not be treated. In 2004, Scott married Coral in prison. They separated in 2007. At his parole hearing in 2020, the board noted that he was supported by his partner of 16 years. In 2007, Scott was found guilty of assaulting another inmate in prison. In 2006, his appeal against that conviction failed. His next hearing is set, well, it was set for October. I haven't seen anything about it. If I do see any updates, I will post on my Facebook page. Ben and Olivia's bodies have never been found. Thank you for listening.